Welcome to the Critical Media Studies Podcast. We're your hosts, Mike Rapici
and Barry Falk.
Dr. Rapici.
Dr. Falk, good evening.
I'm broadcasting from NYC, Big Apple tonight.
How cosmopolitan of you.
I know. And not feeling well, so don't envy me because I'm shaky.
I'm hoping you pull through, man.
I'm hoping I pull through too, because it would be a real disappointment to be here and then all of a sudden say, oh, I'm sick of my room. Oh. But let's hope. And I think already our discussion has given me a little bit of revivification. So let's do our usual thing, Dr. Rapici. Let's talk about cultural theory.
Let's.
Cultural critic. Specifically, we're going to talk about, I'm already going to open with a hyperbole. Let's do it. I'm in New York City. It's a Big Apple. There's excitement going on. I hear sirens out there right now. So let's just go there. We're going to talk about what I think is a really visionary, even though this was written in 1926, I think that we're going to focus on some passages near the end where the writer detonates a lot of bombs and makes a lot, and I think illuminates our present cultural moment. The name of the essay, this 1926 essay, is Cult of Distraction on Berlin's Picture Palaces. Doesn't sound like that's really that exciting, but oh, dear listener, dear reader, yes, we're going to make the argument it is. And it's by the German, really kind of jack of all trades. It's amazing. I always love this. Oh, well, it's by, let me finish my sentence because I have that annoying habit of never finishing a sentence. You're very generous to me, but I'm going to finish it. Cult of Distraction, title of the essay, on Berlin's Picture Palaces, by Siegfried Krakauer. Two sentences about Siegfried Krakauer. Kind of a jack of all trades. He was a cultural critic, but also kind of, he would go on maybe about 40 years later. It's interesting. He had a long and interesting and fascinating career. He's a premier film critic. He wrote Theory of Film, still an influential book that talks about realism. And in fact, kind of a different argument, but we're not going to get into the weeds in this, but I'll flag it. In the 1960 book he wrote, which kind of became a handbook for film studies for about 10, 20 years afterwards, it's a book called Theory of Film. He, interestingly enough, says that film is a wonderful art form because more than any other art form, and he does believe it's an art form, he always did, that sense, that argument is still here in this 1926 essay. But in 1960, he goes to a place that's kind of surprising, and we're not going to talk anything about it, but I'll just throw it out there for those interested. In Theory of Film, he makes this argument that film is really important. He's influenced by André Bazin, another friend of the show. We have cosmopolitan friends. He's influenced by Bazin, and he argues in Theory of Film that what makes film a breakthrough art and an innovational art, historically important and also aesthetically important, is that it allows a greater realism, visual realism, than has ever been possible before, that novels obviously can't do, and that photographs can't quite do either. That's his argument. So, okay, but I should also say one last thing, and I'll get off the subject, and I want you to sort of talk about the art. You said you were going to talk about the art. So let me say just one other thing about Krakauer. Film critic of note, but really one of those German cultural critics that, boy, you know, the war, World War II kind of threw them out. They obviously entered a diaspora. And it kind of, this kind of, you know, there was a big historical rupture, but Krakauer belongs to, you know, is a kind of, you know, to call him just a film critic, even though we're going to be talking about film here. And he wrote Theory of Film, a film textbook. To just talk about him as a film critic is to do him a disservice, because he's much closer to Walter Benjamin, and in particular, maybe more than Benjamin even, Theodor Adorno. I love this little story, which may not be true, but I'm going to spread it, because why not? I think it's true, actually. Adorno said, Krakauer taught me how to read Kant. He went over to Siegfried Krakauer's house and he was doing Kant tutorials.
That's a good friend.
The Germans are serious.
That's a good friend.
That's a friend. Now that's a friend who takes you through the Critique of Pure Reason. I've never done that for you.
No, but I'm. But we're not done yet.
It's your friend.
We're not done yet. I'll be by at some point.
Okay, let me wrap this up. Just making the point that although we're going to be talking about Krakauer's film criticism, he's kind of broader than that. He's a general intellectual. He's what you call, and what Germany had a hell of a lot of back in those days, a cultural critic. And that while he talks about art and aesthetics, and that's what this essay is about, he's always trying, I'm sure you will agree. Do you agree with this, Dr. Ippeachy? I was going to say that, yes, he talks about art. Yes, he talks about film in particular as an art form. But I would think that what distinguishes him is that he is interested in the social effects, the social consequences, the social affect, whatever, of art. So it's not, he doesn't talk about art and aesthetics in a vacuum. He's always thinking about politics, and in particular, and I don't even want to use politics because that makes it sound, well, he's a partisan dude. And he is, but he's a really broad intellect. I would say that he's interested in culture and society, you know.
I read this as if he were a cultural critic,
yeah, indeed.
Simply and writing with film as his particular lens for this criticism.
Well, I think that's our takeaway. I mean, that should be our opening gambit for listeners, that, you know, to read this essay on film, if you're interested in film, fine. If you're interested in film and how it relates to culture, maybe you definitely want to.
Maybe better. Yeah, it's interesting. I'm going to take a shot at a quick summary of this. The thing that's tricky about that, though, is that this is one of the most densely put together short essays we've read for a while. And excuse me, there's a few different places we could go with the discussion, though. I think you and I have a planned arc. We'll see how well we go from A to B to C. But the argument, and Barry, correct me if I wander astray here, the argument that he seems to be making is that the film houses in Berlin in 1926, for him, are these fantastic places of distraction. And they're different than the film houses elsewhere because of the context in which they exist.
It is a largely working class audience in Berlin.
Right. Yeah, but, and this is why I said I read this as cultural criticism, because the distinction really is cultural. Like the effect of the film house, and I guess film as a result, is, you know, he argues that the distraction is effective and important because it is cultural, because it shows us, or them, excuse me, I guess I'm not in the 20s, you know, versions of things that are relatable and understandable. And so he argues that for those in industrial towns, that they're just so burdened by work and by the nature of their existence that they can't see past that. And that those in other areas that aren't so industrial heavy really suffer the fact that the art is still largely governed by an upper class that is not like them and therefore is not relatable. So the big argument is that the distraction that the films create is this sort of reflection of life in ways that are relatable. It's funny that you said earlier that he had argued that film was an influential art, because I got the sense here that he was arguing that this, I would say that he was arguing here that film was an art of potential, that there was but maybe a flawed or unrealized potential. And so this is sort of the second part of his argument here, is that these films had the potential for change, for social, to incite social change, because we see a version of the chaos that is our lives. And in theory, I think that is supposed to spur us on to action. But the problem is that there's sort of a return to the mean here, right? Like everything sort of converges back to a recognizable whole, and we lose the sense of that chaos.
And the other big word he wants to use is fragmentation, which is a good thing. And can I add? Let me just add one thing. I think we're ready to dip into the essay, but I just want to add one thing. Simply, this is mostly for our audience, who is used to hearing us whenever we say distraction. I mean, I think that's when the bells and buzzers go off. Because we say, a distraction, that's making us effing stupid. We hate that. That's non-cognitive. Ooh,
It's different here.
We get alarmed. That's not the case here. And that actually is one of the reasons we were attracted to this essay, in that distraction here is, let me just add one thing. Distraction is an aesthetic principle, number one. And then number two, it's a positive thing.
So can we linger on distraction for just a second?
Of course we may.
So my read of distraction here is that, again, it's a cultural, in a sense, it's almost as if it's a cultural immersion. Like I get to remove myself or distance myself from my own reality and see snippets of this fragmented reality that is recognizable. One of the significant differences in distraction here, as opposed to the ways that we've talked about it, and we had spoken about this earlier, is, you know, Stiegler argues that we need these moments to step outside and sort of just idly noesis, he calls it, right? Just to idly daydream and drift. Whereas this is a distraction that is very much rooted in an engagement.
Yes, exactly.
Something external. So in a way, this is the polar opposite. This is a completely different opposite. I am having trouble with words tonight. This could be tricky.
Opposite? I like that. Different opposite.
A different opposite. We're looking, God Lord. Okay. I refuse to cut this or edit this either. We're all going to suffer through it together. Krakauer's arguing that this distraction is both engaging and external, which is a total departure from what Stiegler was arguing, which was that the distraction that we needed for productivity would be internal and sort of just whimsical, daydreamy kind of thing.
I am very glad for our listeners and for ourselves that we had this digression.
I'm glad y'all stayed with me through it.
It was very important. I'm glad we stuck with it. I'm glad you stuck with it, because it's not a digression at all. Otherwise, you know, listeners, if you listen to another episode, we've never talked about distraction in the particular way we're talking about distraction now.
Yeah, it's new.
So I'm very glad that we flagged that at the very beginning. But shall we?
Yeah.
Into the essay? Yeah. All right. And then we can, you know, maybe we'll find something in the passages that we want to sort of go back and expound, but maybe we want to move forward. We'll see. All right. Now, as Michael mentioned, as Dr. Rapici mentioned, densely compacted essay, but in an exciting way. In an exciting way, right? 6 pages or so. Densely compacted, not in a difficult, you know, not in an obscure, not in an obscurity, obscure way. I can't pronounce things. Not in an obscure way, but it's dense in that there are a lot of interesting interconnected ideas that he kind of detonates and just sort of, you know, drops the bomb and moves on. But it's not disjointed. And it's not necessarily difficult to read. There's just a lot going on. Okay, so we chose to mainly talk about the conclusion. And so that's what we're going to cherry pick some passages near the conclusion of the essay. Let me do a pedantic scholarly note, simply because we should always give scholars credit scholars who toil in the vineyards of scholarship. Let's give them some love. This is translated by Thomas F. Levin, a Y. Levin, who's done a lot of translation work, to tireless translation work, not only for Krakauer, but for Adorno and for Benjamin. So he's a kind of hero of German criticism. He's done a lot to make German cultural criticism legible to people like me who don't know German. Anyway, okay, but now we're in the essay. A correct instinct will see to it that the need for entertainment is satisfied. Let me skip to the third sentence on page 94, first paragraph. The stimulations of the senses succeed each other in a film with such rapidity that there is no room left for even the slightest contemplation to squeeze in between them. Now, just quick flag, that sounds like, you know, it's a bad thing.
Horrible.
I mean, if that was in Adorno, if that was in, well, both Adorno and certainly Stiegler, we'd be saying, we know he'd be sweating that, right?
There's Adorno would say that, I think, and then say, see, it's horrible. And Stiegler would just say, this is completely what we're trying to escape. So, yes.
So unlike a distraction for Stiegler and also for Adorno, distraction in this particular case makes the Berlin viewer, the Berlin spectator, and I think this is what I was referring to. We had a little technical glitch, everyone, but we're back at it. I think that actually the thought I was just trying to complete before we were rudely interrupted was the idea that there's a kind of political potential for cinema and cinema distraction in Berlin that isn't there in you already talked about this, isn't there in the provincial audiences, simply because the provincial audiences don't really have time for leisure.
Right.
So there is time for leisure and distracted leisure among the Berlin audiences. And that's what Krakauer feels enables a kind of, or contains a little bit of political potential.
And that, I think it's important to notice though, that the need for time is consistent across all these thinkers that we're talking about in terms of distraction. Like, you have to have the time to be distracted.
Yeah,
it's absolutely. It's what you do.
That's exactly right.
Or how that leisure time is filled. So, yeah.
Okay, so now let me just continue and then I'm going to pass it to you again and just finish off that paragraph. The penchant for distraction demands and finds an answer in the display of pure externality. And okay, I read that part about Berlin. Hence this tendency, the irrefutable tendency, particularly in Berlin, to turn all forms of entertainment into reviews, and parallel with this tendency, the increasing amount of illustrations in daily press and in periodical publications. So let me just quick gloss on this. Reviews, what he's talking about is basically variety theater. Mm-hmm. So in variety theater, it's kind of the opposite of theater where you have a play
that's
coherent and unified. A review show, a variety show, will have jugglers, and then it will have a singer, and then it will have somebody else. And so it's really distraction. It's just distraction. There is no coherent narrative. But for Krakauer, all the better for that.
Well,
This engagement with externality is what he thinks has political potential for the Berlin film spectator.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder if this isn't part of the other part of the distinction that makes Berlin different than the other more provincial areas that he's talking about. He says here, the stimulations of the senses succeed each other with such rapidity that there is no room left. Mm-hmm. It's just this constant onslaught where it's one, then the next, then the next.
Review, the main thing about a review in a variety theater is that you have to have you can't have pauses between it, right? You're hit with something new. You know, it's not a totality. There's no continuity.
No,
but at the same time, you have to move from one segment to the other at the quickest, most rapid pace.
And that, I'll tell you, one of the things that struck me about this article, despite the fact that it is, 98 years old, was that you think about what he's talking about here, And I tell you, as I read this, Barry, it was like, my God, you can read this and just totally position yourself in the present.
Sure you could.
And what's he's talking about scrolling through social media. He's talking about
media, same thing.
And it's uncanny.
Where discontinuity and fragmentation
and rapidity.
And rapidity, speed is the norm.
Yes.
And unlike somebody like Adorno, he's saying that among a certain audience, there is something kind of politically subversive about this art form, about this about review.
Yeah, I think he's saying there could be.
There could be, yes.
And that's the problem. We'll get to that when we get to the end of this, though. But okay. So that's good. Do you want to talk, I guess, the next section?
Well, let's do that. And then I think I want to ask you, and maybe this quote that I'm about to read will allow us to talk about it. But if it doesn't, I think the next thing we need to talk about and clarify is why externality and distraction in the Berlin case is cool. Now, as you said, it's not always cool. There's a potential there that's not being lived up to, whatever. But he does feel it's positive, as opposed to somebody like Adorno, who cries fee on the whole phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So I kind of am going to ask you, hopefully prompted by the passage I'll read, about like, okay, so what's cool about this? We said that he likes distraction as opposed to Stiegler. Why? Mm-hmm. Okay. They claim, here he's talking about... Oh, let me start from the middle of the paragraph. Furthermore, to show you how up to date, actually, we were talking about this before we started recording, how up to date Krakauer is, how timely he is. There's a kind of scorn for the work of cultural elites. That's mm-hmm. one of the things he likes about the review in the film. Further, and in this middle of the paragraph, he's hitting you hard and heavy with his critique of cultural elites. Furthermore, many of these concepts have acquired a bad aftertaste today because they unjustifiably deflect an inordinate amount of attention away from the external damage of society onto the private individual. Instances of such repression, non-distracted, non-fragmented art, are common enough in the fields of literature, drama, and music. I mean, that is where he differs from Adorno. Mm-hmm. There is no possible redemptive force for the aesthetic, you know, in those forms. These forms claim the status of high art while actually rehearsing anachronistic, out of bloody date forms, which evade the pressing needs of our time. A fact which is indirectly confirmed by the artistically derivative quality of their respective productions in Berlin. In a profound sense, Berlin audiences act truthfully when they don't go see high art, when they shun, in his words, these art events, which in his mind, he could be, well, I say this with caution, but, you know, the contempt for cultural elites that is a kind of staple mm-hmm. of our public discourse. I mean, this paragraph, at least, is full of it.
Yeah.
Let me continue. They claim the status of high art, blah, 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 blah. In a profound sense, where was I? In a profound sense, Berlin audiences act truthfully when they shun these art events, which for good reason remain caught in mere pretension. BS, we would say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Preferring instead the surface glamour of the stars, films, reviews, and production values. Now, quick Adorno gloss. One of Adorno's main, and I just want to mark how different Krakauer is from Adorno. That last phrase I read shows you his big difference with Adorno. One of Adorno's main critique of Walter Benjamin's origin of, the work of art in the age of technological
reproducibility.
Yeah. Thank you. I was blanking on it. You helped me. Technological reproducibility. One of Adorno's central critiques is, you know what? Film Walter is not that subversive. And I can prove it because film has already in the 20s and 30s been, quote, and this could almost be a quote from Adorno's critique of Benjamin, where he says, "Ben, Walter, there's no political, redemptive political potential in film because whatever potential there was, it has been captured by," I'm going to read Krakauer now, "the surface glamour of the stars, films, reviews, and production values." So Adorno just points to celebrity and says, that's how I know this is BS. Krakauer wants to redeem what Adorno finds irredeemable.
So what's the question?
The question is, did we answer it? What's political about externality? What's political about this fragmented, distracting art? What's political in a positive way?
Well, I think what he's getting at, and this also, oddly enough, as I read him, becomes sort of the Achilles heel of film as he's talking about it and when he's mm-hmm. talking about it, mm-hmm. is the cultural relevance of what film does, that viewers see snapshots of the chaos that is everyday life, right? Like the analogy that I would use to explain this is that if you were to take a film reel and you were to look at each individual still image, you would see in these moments things that are truthful because they're lived experiences that resonate with you. This is the problem, I think, that he has with high art, is that there is no resonance. It is something that is that requires a special training or requires a special eye or requires a special class status for entry. The film house doesn't require any of that. And what you get when you go,
yes, exactly. Right.
is you get someone who speaks your language, you get familiar locales. And so I think the political aspect of this is in the creation of a mass, which is
a larger audience. Right?
Yes.
A mass
yes.
Audience. Right.
Mass audience, excuse me, which is uniform, which is unified in these various cultural moments.
Wonderful. So good, Michael. So good.
Which again, and this is his thing here, I think, are sincere, right? That's the word, one of the words he uses.
And he likes, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I have something to, no, I want you to finish you were doing brilliantly there. I don't want to get in your way. Please finish your thought.
So the problem that he comes up with is that high art doesn't do this. And right. So he says, fields of literature, drama, and music, they claim the status of high art were actually rehearsing anachronistic forms which evade the pressing needs of our times. This is his problem. This is why, you know, and this is how he's able to call high art an anachronism, is that you don't speak for us. I mean, this is the political tagline against the liberal elites today, right? That this is, you're detached, you don't get it,
you're not getting it, you're not trying, you're imposing your snobbery on, and you're not even trying to understand the people you oppose.
Right.
Just say they're stupid and you ignore them.
That's it.
Okay, you're going to let me do this because I want to do a quick digression before I go back to the text. But here's why you're going to let me do it. Because I'm going to draw attention to your brilliance. So you can't get in the way of that. Because in the answer you just gave, I was early. You will remember. Our listeners will remember. Maybe. Or at least I remember that I initially said, well, it's kind of weird given this essay that 40 years later, Krakauer would write an essay. And in that essay, he would say, well, film is all about realism. But you perfectly explain why. I mean, you explained to me, or you just showed me, that a concern with realism, i.e., you used the word, a representation of everyone's lived shared experience, is crucial to this essay. That's what's political about it.
Yeah.
That's what he likes about it. That's why distraction in this case is good.
And it's why high art fails.
And exactly right. And why high art fails. Okay, I just wanted to praise you on that because I was thinking, how did he get from one from point A to point B, but you answered it. Okay, let's move to our closing passages here. I just want to read this, and I don't know if you want to comment on this sentence. I'm just going to read it, and this is going to be, what is the word? This is going to be aesthetic. If I had some sherry right now, and I could share sherry or a good aperitif with my good colleague, Dr. Rapici, and with you, good listeners, I would, because what we're going to do is imagine that you have some sherry, and you could stop your podcast, go get an after dinner drink, and savor along with Dr. Barry Falk. Savor this brilliant apocalyptic visionary sentence from Siegfried Krakauer, where Siegfried Krakauer, I wouldn't say he's a boring writer, but he's not a boring writer, I would even say. But he is not striving for apocalyptic effect or dramatic effect, whereas Walter Benjamin like really does. But this one sentence, top of 95, is a sentence where he is visionary in the way that I'm sort of familiar with from Walter Benjamin's prose, and sometimes in Adorno's prose. Okay. In the streets of Berlin, one is not seldom struck. I guess I do want you to gloss this, and I'll offer a quick gloss on it before we move on to our final things. But it really struck me because it's visionary and apocalyptic in a way that is uncharacteristic for Krakauer. In the streets of Berlin, one is not seldom struck by the momentary insight that one day all this will suddenly burst apart. The entertainment to which the general public throngs, the fragment, not high art,
right?
But the fragmented review, the disjointed review, the entertainment to which the mass audience, the general, his word for mass audience is a better word, is right, general public, to which the general public, including the working class, throngs, the entertainment to which the general public throngs, that's the verb, ought to produce the same effect. It should make you think, this can't keep on going.
It could end at any minute.
This could end. This, and I think we may have stumbled on another reason why he thinks this is political and high art isn't. Because if I understand right, what he's saying is, when you see the review, the review is a perfect representation of the lived experience of that society, right? As you were saying. And the truth of this society, it's on the edge of effing chaos.
Well,
and good art, in this case, the review, reminds you of that. High art papers it over.
High art is nostalgia. Right?
High art is nostalgia.
And
not responding to the time, which is a dangerous time. This is the other way in which this is a really visionary essay and speaks to us, I think.
But it's interesting that he doesn't say, and this is again, that it ought to produce the same effect, not that it does produce the same effect.
Oh, no. Like, yeah, there's nothing guaranteed in this, right?
Yes.
But still, I would say that's an essential difference between Adorno, because Adorno isn't looking for that. And he wouldn't think that.
No, I think what Krakauer is arguing here is that, again, if you were to pause the film, you would see society, yeah. You would see your cultural moment on the verge. You would see chaos. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that there is that regression to the mean where everything has to come back to this stable, reassembled, non-chaotic moment.
And that's what high art in this context tries to reestablish.
Right, right.
Michael, I'm tempted to make the executive move, but I'm going to ask you if you're okay with it. I kind of want to move to the end.
Yeah, that's fine.
Wrap this up. Well, I'm going to read a fair portion of the penultimate paragraph on page 96 in the wonderful.
I think this is actually a good. This is a good time to do it. I think this is where we are.
Yeah. So I'm going to read a fair amount of it, but I won't comment on, and I'll let you have first stab on commenting on, and then I'll comment on, and maybe we'll achieve a semblance of closure. Okay. The proximity of action, which has spatial depth, no, let me start in the next sentence. By its very existence, film demands that the world it reflects, as you know, after your comment, really helpful, Michael, because I'm seeing now in this prose, I'm seeing all these key words about reflection, realism, that ironically enough is showing up in the new form of the review in the Variety Theater and the movie, and also the movie.
Right.
So it's interesting, right? That word reflects mimesis, representation.
Yes, 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 yes. Well, I think that's central to this.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I lost my place. By its very existence, film demands that the world it reflects be the only one. It should be wrested from every three-dimensional surrounding, lest it fail as an illusion. This is the thing. You got to know that art is a lie. Otherwise, it doesn't have any critical potential.
Right.
You got to know this is made up.
Right.
If you invest in the illusion that art is giving you an improved totalizing picture of the world, you miss the boat.
Correct.
Yes.
A painting.
It should be wrested from a painting. A painting, too, loses its power when it appears alongside living images. Not to mention that the artistic ambitions, which result in the incorporation of the film into the pseudo-totality of a program. He doesn't like pseudo-totality. That's too much what high art does. And the idea of a totalizing vision of an effed up society, gotta be a lie.
Right.
If you, this goes back to the passage we were just talking about. If you live in a society that's about to, you know, blow up, and then you present a picture of the society, no, totalize, it's beautiful. You just have to see the whole picture and you'll realize how beautiful it is. Well, for crack hour, you're lying to yourself. And those kind of filmmakers or those kind of theater makers, playmakers, high artists, they're lying to the people. Okay. A painting too loses its power when it appears alongside living images, not to mention that the artistic ambitions which result in the incorporation of the film into the pseudo-totality of a program are inappropriate and hence remain unsuccessful. But the movie theaters are faced with more urgent tasks than refining applied art. They will not fulfill their vocation until they cease to flirt with the theater, anxious to restore a bygone culture. Okay, I think we have some things we can comment on and close out on. Do you want to take a stab? Or no?
Go ahead.
Well, I think actually the last sentence I read is, and I think it's not, I think that's the most telling and the one I would like to talk about for the benefit of our listeners. Because, you know, there's this timeliness, right? He's trying to connect his criticism. He's trying to do timely cultural criticism. We've said this over and over again. He's trying to do timely cultural criticism. He's trying to respond to his times. And one of his major criticism of high art is it denies the times. It avoids the times. It avoids engaging with the times. So this, to me, he ends, I think, on a practical bit of advice that he's giving the filmmakers. And let's go back. I don't know if we talked about this in the pre-show, in the pre-game, or if we talked about it in the episode, but I'm going to make reference to it. Did we say anything about the fact that theater, I think this was in the pre-game show, we mentioned, you asked, you know, aren't film professionals coming from theater? And I said, not at this time, right? It's a different thing. It's almost the difference between TikTok and, I don't know, filmmakers, right? So I think this is an advice to the TikTokers of his generation who he's equating. TikTok producers, right? Not consumers, but makers.
Which would be the filmmakers of his time.
Yeah, the filmmakers of his time. I think he's alluding to them and giving them practical advice, saying, okay, you're a minority. Everyone wants to bag on TikTok, for example. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to bag on social media, especially the high art MFers, mofos,
mm-hmm.
especially the high art people, especially the theater people. They say drama is high art and you're nothing. You're mm-hmm. nothing. You're catering to the masses and you're doing something vulgar. I think this last paragraph, especially that last sentence, he's saying very daringly, you know what? Don't back down. Don't mix your art. Stick to your guns. Keep your medium. Keep to your lane, because your lane is the lane that matters. You can't go back. If nothing else, he's saying, don't go back. Don't soft sell it. Keep on going in the road you're going. More fragmentation, not less. More distraction, not less. That's my reading.
Okay, so it seems to me that he's arguing in this, and I'd be curious if you read this differently, that though the film artists are producing something mm-hmm. that is culturally accurate, or what's his word for that again? Culturally, where's his word? Culturally sincere, right? That it's recognizable, that it doesn't need to be the real world. Mm-hmm. And so I want your thought on this, right? Because he's saying that, you know, the existence of film demands that the world it reflects be the only one. It mm-hmm. should be wrested away from every three-dimensional surrounding, lest it fail as an illusion. So he's not arguing that we create a facsimile. We're creating an illusion. This is not supposed to be the same thing.
We're fragmenting things. We're not creating
right. a total. And so he's calling, and I think that's what he's saying, is that we're not trying to produce a unified whole. Mm-hmm. What he's really arguing for, as I read this, is a means of keeping that tension or that chaos or that threat of disintegration, that threat that all of this could implode, that needs to be preserved somehow. Mm-hmm. And so I think, to your point about saying keep on, this is not about producing something that is going to
absolutely
function as a unified whole. That
yeah,
doesn't
that's
need
my central point. That's
yes.
My
central point. Okay, then yes, I'm in complete agreement with that. What's frightening to me mm-hmm. is that, as we said, this is 98 years old. The mediums have changed, but man, this is still the exact same argument now.
It's the exact same argument. And the criticism of cultural elites, in a scary way, in a way that kind of disturbs me.
That's us, isn't it?
It's us. Yeah. It is the argument almost with no changes. It is the argument that people make today.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of that, though.
I don't know.
Because
either.
I can't, you know, the thing is, and I don't want to drag this on forever, but I can't say he's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the problem is when you get to this sort of elite perspective, you lose perspective and you fail to see what the chaos, what the fragmentation of life is, you know, because I can't even complete a sentence here. This is a compelling argument.
Yeah. You know what? I just thought of a quote from his opposite. Well, not his opposite, but in this essay, someone who's, I think, developing a different argument or taking a very different tack on the question of cinema and presenting a very different view of distraction. But so I'm going to quote Adorno. But Adorno may have whatever his differences from Krakauer, maybe he figured out the solution to the problem, or something that, you know, this as good a way to end this episode as any. So there's one very famous, or at least Adorno fans, there's a celebrated passage where Adorno says, for all his defense of rigorously intellectual art, there is this one passage where he says, high art and popular culture will by themselves will never be satisfying. So what has to be recreated is a different sphere where the high and low, quote unquote, can interact in a different way, so that the solution can go to the popular, and it doesn't lie in simply in the culture of the general public, to use Krakauer's word, nor does it reside in the world of high art, even though Adorno often occupies it.
So the argument then is that essentially we need one to push off against the other.
Yes, yes. Well, and basically a principal order where we're not going to be conscious of the polarity and antagonism between the two realms. One of the things that Krakauer is very aware of is the antagonism. That's why he takes aside antagonism between high art and the cult of distraction embodied in film. This is why he takes aside.
Mm.
So Adorno is hoping for a world where there's no longer this basic antagonism. How about that?
I like it. I like it. Well, I don't have anything to add to this, Barry. This is, you know, as I said, this is a fairly dense little reading. And I think that, you know, in the fact that it worked in 26 and that it works here in 2024 is kind of insane to me. I just keep coming back to that.
I agree with you. I think it was a really interesting essay to grapple with. Thank you very much for helping me grapple with it and
absolutely
deal with it.
Thank you as well. Enjoy New York.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Critical Media Studies podcast. To find out more about the show, check out on our webpage at criticalmediastudiespodcast.com.